Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden, and I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino.
How are you?
And we are here to talk about the yugas today.
Yes, we are. And it should be a really interesting show because a lot of the topics we've discussed on the show in previous episodes are very tangential and connected to the yuga cycle in general.
Yes, and of course this has been my area of focus through the book Lost Star of Myth and Time and through the film that Jeff and I did, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. And so we're delighted today to have a guest that has spent many, many years studying the yugas. And her name is Asha Praver. And Asha is a native of Texas who went to Stanford University and for several years in the 60s participated in anti-war protests and other counterculture events. But her deep interest was always in Eastern spirituality. And so this is really what she has spent most of her life involved in. And we'll be talking with Asha about her experiences there in the spiritual life as well as her knowledge of the yugas.
So Asha, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
So tell us a little more about yourself. I mean, I know Walter gave the brief overview. How originally did you come to learn about the yugas?
Well, even before that, was there some epiphany that led to your interest in a spiritual life?
Well, the epiphany was just the experience of life itself and the inner compelling belief that there had to be some deeper answer than was being offered to me by Western culture and Western education. The real change came when I met Swami Kriyananda, who was a direct disciple of Paramhansa Yogananda, author of Autobiography of a Yogi. Many of the listeners may know that book. And when I met him in the end of the year 1969, he personified for me the fulfillment in an individual of practical spirituality, exactly what I was looking for. And he was starting a community called Ananda at that time in near Grass Valley, California. And really, it didn't take me very long to decide that the whole package was exactly what I was looking for, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
I remember that was a very idealistic time in America, the late 60s here. And, you know, that's my own era, and it seemed like things were really going on a terrific path there for a while, but the whole sort of drug culture sort of sideswiped the awakening that was occurring.
The drugs had an interesting dual influence. Ultimately, it sabotaged it completely. I agree with you. There was also sort of a brief period for a few individuals in which altering consciousness chemically awakened people to the concept that altered consciousness was what they were seeking, but not through chemical means, but through self-transformation. But then those who sought a quicker route, where the aspiration and the desire for self-indulgence were all mixed up, it kind of turned out to be a cul-de-sac.
I would agree with that. I think it did give some people a glimpse, and then you know, too much of anything goes in the wrong direction sometimes.
Well, it depends on what the inner motivation is. If a soul is just courageously experimenting, looking for an alternative, and the inner motivation is really one of self-effort, not one of self-indulgence, then things turn out one way. If it's looking for an easy way out, there just isn't one.
That's beautifully put. So then did you actually go and live at Ananda, which was just getting started there in the late 60s?
Yes, in the early summer of 1971, when I was just before I turned 24, I went up to the Ananda community, which at that time was basically just bare land with a few really shabby buildings on it and a group of extremely idealistic, mostly young people led by Swami Kriyananda, who was 20 years older than us. He was at the ripe old age of 40, which seemed enormously old to us at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And we lived, it was back to the land, and we lived in tents and teepees and trailers and little sheds that we'd put together for $150. And it was extremely fun, a great adventure that had at the real core of it the desire for spiritual transformation. It was a sociological experiment, but the core of it was really spiritual. And over time, it gradually sort of shook itself out, and those who were there for other reasons than the pure commitment to the spiritual path, it over time the community defined itself in a more spiritual way. And even though all the alternate lifestyle elements, even to this day, 40 years later, are still in place, the motivating power was always spirituality.
Well, that's the strongest basis for any relationship, personal, with an individual as well as a community. Right now, we need to take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttendon is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host Walter Cruttendon, and today we are talking to Asha Praver about the Yuga Cycle.
And Asha, right before the break, we were talking about Ananda, and you'd mentioned how sparse it was back in the early 70s there, and I just wanted to say I had a chance to visit, actually, for my first time this year, and it's a lot more than teepees now. It's just a beautiful, beautiful community that has been established there with schools and homes, and the land looks so beautiful, and you've all done just a terrific job of building a spiritual community there.
It's been just a really delightful adventure from start to finish.
Yeah. How many people live up there now, by the way?
At Ananda Village, there's about 250, and then we have seven other communities. I myself live in Palo Alto, California, where we have an urban community. We've taken an apartment complex and essentially taken a master lease for Ananda, so almost all the apartments are filled by people who are part of the spiritual community. So it's a kind of a modified form, so people can live where they're used to living and hold the regular jobs that they've held if they want to keep working that way, and then still have the whole environment in which they live be spiritually supportive. It's been a great and a very successful experiment.
Yeah, that sounds like just a wonderful concept.
It is a wonderful concept. My husband and I came here 20 years ago at the request of Swami Kriyananda, and we looked around and we said, you know, there's communities all over the place. They're called apartment complexes. It's just that people don't know each other and they don't have a unified ideal.
Yeah.
So we just sort of slipped in and started doing this. It's been replicated now by Ananda in several other places, and people are trying to build these now from scratch, not as idealistically as we live, but at least with the concept of neighbors and neighborhoods. And because this is all, and you know, this is your overall theme, this is all the new lifestyle of the future. Times are changing and people are looking.
Well, Yogananda had talked about this in Autobiography of Yogi, didn't he, towards the end of the book, as I recall?
At the end of the book of the first edition, when he published the book, the last chapter is about the need, what he called world brotherhood colonies. He said brotherhood is an ideal better understood by example than merely by precept. To see it demonstrated, small groups of people living in harmony, simplifying their lives, living in a supportive and harmonious way, and with a spiritually supportive, he said, will go a great distance to bring to the conscious awareness of people in the world a real alternative.
Well, it's a positive step. We want to have a positive world. We need good communities. If we want to have good communities, we need strong families. And if you want to make a positive impact on your family, why, we need to do the internal work ourselves. And I know that you've been very involved in in meditation and the spiritual studies. And can you talk just a little bit about what sort of personal discipline you've been involved in?
Well, my whole spiritual life has been the fact of living in community is an integral part of the spirituality that I practice in this sense, which is it's very practical and all pervasive. You know, the American concept of religion is an hour or so on Sunday morning, and it, even if people are sincere, it's difficult to understand how to convert everyday life into a practical application of spiritual principles. So forming a whole community in which we've collectively tried to work out how do you relate to other people, how do you relate to your business, how do you be creative, how do you raise your kids, how do you conduct your marriage, if personal spiritual development and the realization of God consciousness is your goal. So on one end, I would say my spiritual practice has been every minute of every day. On the other hand, of course, the foundation of what Yogananda taught is the practice of meditation, especially Kriya Yoga, which is a particular kind of meditation, very ancient, very central. You know, it's like it's the ground on which many spiritual practices are built, of inner communion and working with the inner energies, with kundalini energy, with the chakras, with concentration at the spiritual eye, concepts that you touch into whenever you get close to yoga practice.
Right. Well, you're preaching to the choir here.
I know, I'm preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
But it's good just to hear it from another devotee. And
sure. Well, you know, I've spent all these 40 years, almost all of it, helping other people. From the very beginning, Swami Kriyananda put me at our meditation retreat, teaching others, and then gradually I was out on the road, traveling mostly in this country. And for the last 20 years, my husband and I together have been running this community, which also includes a temple and a teaching center. And I've had the wonderful opportunity to introduce probably thousands, maybe even tens of thousands by now, to the basic concepts of Yogananda's teaching of Kriya Yoga. And there's something in it for everybody. You know, we're all looking basically for the same thing, which is, you might even call it how to get a grip, you know, how to find a steady place to stand in the swirling reality of daily life, and something that gives meaning and focus to everything else that we're doing. How can you tell what's right, which way is forward? What will be really helpful? How to tune into a reality greater than yourself? It was such a relief to me to discover these teachings. It's a favor that I can never fully repay if I spend all and the rest of my life sharing it with others. It's just so helpful in such a simple way.
Excellent. Well, I know that you've written a book on the topic, Swami Kriyananda, as we have known him. And I know that you've lived your life in a centered manner. I wanted to move now, if we could, towards the sort of some of the philosophy that surrounds the spiritual life that you've lived, which is a knowledge of the yugas and sort of understanding your place in history.
Mm-hmm.
How did you first get exposed to the yuga cycle, and what has been your interest in this part of the teachings?
Well, the first introduction was a few paragraphs in Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda, in which he confirms a tradition that is not unique to India but has been kept alive in India, which is that there's a cycle of planetary evolution that applies to Earth, in which the ages rise and fall. And he speaks of the tradition of, you know, that the iron, the bronze, the silver, and the golden age. And he confirms from Indian tradition that this is a truth. And then he puts, and later on I heard Swami Kriyananda, who'd learned it from Yogananda and studied it on his own in India, confirm the placement of ourselves in history now as on the upswing of this long cycle. And at first you think of it, you think, well, these are the whole yuga cycle of the four ages, you know, descends for 12,000 years and then ascends for 12,000 years and then peaks and descends again. This is the tradition as Yogananda and his gurus taught it. And you think, that's a pretty long cycle, you know, maybe I'll live 60 or 70 or 80 years, like, how do I ever fit into that? But it gives an amazing context to understanding sort of what is going on in our society right now and how to respond to it.
And understanding history over a much longer term.
Over a much longer term. You can look backwards and sort of, I mean, oh, there's so many mysteries when you look back, especially over a long cycle of history. I mean, start with the pyramids and the Sphinx and the statues on Easter Island and misplaced artifacts, you know, that the archaeologists find, battery-operated devices and that ancient, whatever they call that, computer device that came out of
the Antikythera device.
Yes, exactly. And none of it makes any sense. It's just totally confusing unless you think of rising and falling civilizations. The other factor is people tend to think of history as like, you know, there's the caveman, and then you have this straight ascending line, and then there's us. And if nothing else, it's extremely discouraging to think that we are the apex of civilization.
Right. We just had a whole conference on that this last weekend, and that's Jeff and I, our main focus here at the Binary Research Institute. And so we're just chuckling with you that we go through these same arguments every day.
Yes, and I'm so glad that you're doing it, because it's just in so many ways right now, people are looking for answers that aren't silly. You know, so much of religious dogma, with all due respect, is just silly. And a great deal of science still just feels like wishful thinking. When you get concepts like this, like the theory of the yugas, which is by no means a whimsical idea, it's an ancient principle that is in large, you know, many cultures in many parts of the world have always held it to be true, all of a sudden, everything makes a lot more sense.
Well, especially when you understand the underlying fundamentals. You know, it's the yuga cycle is driven by a celestial motion. So
yes.
Just as you have a cycle of day and night driven by the celestial motion of the earth spinning on its axis, or you have the cycle of the seasons driven by the earth's orbital motion around the sun, so too, if our solar system is in an even larger motion,
exactly,
you can expect a larger cycle. It's so logical.
And you know, it's so gratifying because it satisfies heart and intellect both. It's common sense. You know, why would there be one system that we can perceive, and why wouldn't that same order just keep extending? At what point does it dissolve into chaos, and why would it?
Exactly. It creates a context which we can live our lives.
Exactly. Very much so. And the fact that, you know, the fact that we are in a transition between the lowest age, which is the materialistic age called Kali, and the age of energy, which is what we're moving into, and that we're in the age of energy, but we're still in the transition period, it helps explain the extreme dichotomy that we're experiencing on the planet at this time. On one hand, it's like the demons have been let loose, and to just destroy and create chaos. And then on the other hand, you see this expanding understanding of goodness and a higher kind of spirituality and a deep inner longing for peace and satisfaction. And it's like, it's polarizing.
Yeah, well, you know, Yogananda himself said it's a little bit of a dangerous time because mankind is becoming aware of finer forces, electricity, magnetism, and you know, atomic power and things like that. So he has some very lethal toys at his disposal.
Yeah.
And the ability to, you know, quickly harvest world resources and use massive amounts of energy, stuff like that. And yet we're still so close to a material age and that consciousness that we haven't quite figured out how to use our toys properly.
No, and the masters all say, including Yogananda, say that the conflict will reach even greater proportions before it resolves, because it's the materialistic age is an age of fixed forms, and that's why the resistance to the coming of the age of energy is taking the form of dogmatism, especially religious dogmatism, in which people are desperately trying to hold the rigidity of these forms against the extremely eroding effect of more subtle ideas, where it's about consciousness and energy and attitude and universality. It's a very insecure world for someone who wants things to get into their place and stay there.
Yeah, well, old institutions are breaking down. Yeah,
exactly.
Those institutions formed in the Kali Yuga. I mean, the Catholic Church has been undergoing great change,
right.
And other, you know, sort of archaic institutions, and they will give ways to newer forms. I mean, democracy is, you know, just was coming into being at the beginning of this cycle a few hundred years ago, and it was a rare experiment here in the U.S., and, you know, now it's breaking out over most of the world to one degree or another. But it takes time, and that breakaway is often violent, and that's what we see. But speaking of breaking away, we need to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. We are speaking today with Asha Praver. Asha has been living at the Ananda Spiritual Community for probably going on 3.5 decades now. And we were just speaking about the yuga cycle. And Asha, one conflict in understanding the yuga cycle is this difference in timing. And as you know, many traditionalists in India view the yuga cycle as being this enormously long cycle and only that cycle. And there's no tie to this short 24,000-year period, relatively short compared to millions of years, the 24,000 years that ties to the precession cycle. I'm just wondering if you all have talked about that and have any thoughts on it.
Well, of course, no. I'm not a person who can perceive these things directly, so to a certain extent you have to look at, I mean, there are scientific ways to study it. You refer to the precession cycle. The way that the masters explain it, and I Swami Kriyananda and David Frawley, to, you know, Vedic authorities, they sat and had a discussion about this, that what happens when Dwapara Yuga descends and we enter into Kali Yuga is that a great deal of knowledge is lost. And the mistake came in, they said, basically when the planet itself became dark, when sources were destroyed by ravening hordes of barbarians, and simply the capacity to understand and the tradition, that the true tradition, became covered over. It was not lost, but it just retreated from common knowledge.
Right. I think Sri Yukteswar in the Holy Science had mentioned it was about the year 700 BC, as we're just going into the descending Kali,
exactly,
that a lot of the great masters of the last descending age were just literally heading for the hills, going to the Himalayas,
right,
and much of the knowledge went with them, or much of it had been kept so secretly by the priests and other cultures that it simply disappeared.
And then, in Autobiography of a Yogi, there's the whole story of the deathless master Babaji calling his disciple to the Himalayas. I mean, these are, on one hand, a person might think they're just marvelous tales, but the more you get into it, the more you realize that there's a tremendous amount of science and not just folklore behind these thoughts, but that because it is an ascending age, it's the planet as a whole is more capable of receiving and understanding these realities, so the keepers of these truths begin to pass them back out into common understanding. If you just look, I mean, just in the span of our own lifetimes, we've just been talking about the late 60s to the present. Look at what a revolution in virtually every field has taken place in these 40 years. I mean, there's cosmic influences, to use the name of your show, at work here. It's not just an accident that all this information is flooding the world. It was there to be perceived, but now consciousness is able to perceive it.
I agree. There's been dramatic changes in the last 50 years, and I think change is moving at an exponential rate.
Yeah.
You know, it's most easily seen in technology, and I often say that technology is sort of a clumsy proxy for showing our increase in ingenuity and awareness and intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, it's not the know-all, be-all solution in itself. As a matter of fact, it creates as many problems as it does solutions. But it does show, you know, when we can build a jet airplane versus 100 years a wagon, it shows how much more expanded our intelligence is. Now, whether or not we use it properly is up to us, of course.
Well, and I think there's a key difference between expansion in intelligence and expansion in consciousness as well. And I think while in the last 100 years we've made a lot of strides in intelligence, I don't think our own consciousness is still dragging behind. I think it's still lagging to catch up.
You might even say our moral development or our understanding of our place on the planet is collectively less highly evolved than our scientific ability to destroy or corrupt the planet, which is what Walter said a little while ago. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree.
So let's get in then to some of the nitty-gritty issues here, like things are much different in the descending age when we're coming down from a spiritual age and the spiritual knowledge permeates the culture and the material logic is you know, very secondary, versus when we're coming up from the depths of the material age, the Kali Yuga, and the spiritual knowledge is sort of lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at these epochs of history, say the descending Dwapara Yuga, a.k.a. the Bronze Age, versus the ascending Dwapara Yuga, the current Bronze Age, we see a much different flavor.
Well, as you're descending, you're gradually forgetting higher truths. And higher truths would be more subtle levels of reality than just the obvious. You know, in the lower ages, energy is created by an animal or a man pushing on something. And, you know, that's what characterizes this age, is that, you know, people used to, everything they did, even our phrases like, how much horsepower does the engine have? That was related to the fact that the only way people could measure energy was with an animal. And so we more subtle levels of understanding apply also to what is a human being, where does happiness come from, what is the right relationship of man to man and person to person. And it all, the material is easier to see than the more subtle, so the material sort of comes first. Just like scientists started out on a materialistic level, but especially the physicists are getting, you know, they're moving into the realm of consciousness. Because at a certain point of subtlety, matter and consciousness simply blend.
Right, although that's probably more Treta Yuga stuff. But I like your analogy about horsepower. Maybe we'll be saying photon power here in the not-too-distant future.
Well, whatever we know now, we'll transcend it, and the past will linger for a while, and then we'll go on from there. Yeah.
Right. So you know, what are some of the ways then that you see society or civilization changing in the future, if you could? We've seen these dramatic changes in the past we've talked about. If you had to make some guesses over the next 50, 100, 500 years, what would you
I think guess? That form is giving way to consciousness and energy. Some of that is destructive in the initial stages because there's a certain stability created by adherence to form. Let's use marriage as an example. The fact that people couldn't get divorced or couldn't have children out of wedlock led a certain stability to society. Now that all of those walls are down, there's a certain chaos taking place in family life. But the positive side of that is that people are making actual experience the criteria of their moral practices. And even though at first there's a kind of rebellion against all rules, actual experience over time gradually becomes a much more dynamic way for people to live, because then the truths that they live by are genuinely their own.
I agree. And yeah. Now we need to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Hi, and welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Bettino with our host, Walter Cruttenden, and today we are talking with Asha Praver. And Asha, you've got a website for your book as well.
Right. I've spent the last almost 40 years in very close association with one of the foremost spiritual teachers of our time, who really was born to help usher in a worldwide way, the new age that we've been talking about. His name is Swami Kriyananda. I've written a book of reminiscences of my own and other people's, and you can find that at dooroftheheart.com, www.dooroftheheart.com. And it's a very interesting first-person account of the life of a real spiritual mentor and how these principles translate.
Excellent. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a main site for Ananda, too?
You can go to ananda.org, and that has all of Kriyananda's books, all about the community he founded. And I myself am part of a branch community, anandapaloalto.org, but ananda.org will take you there.
Terrific.
One of the questions that I know a lot of people tend to ask about the yuga cycle when Walter and I talk about it is, if we're in a lower age, we're only in the very beginnings of the Dwapara Yuga, are we stuck in that level of consciousness, or are there ways that we can work to expand our own consciousness beyond what would be the normal level for this age?
Well, there's two realities going on at all time. You have individual soul evolution, which happens completely outside of the kind of forces we're talking about. We're talking about the yugas on planet Earth. We're not talking about even the yugas in any cosmological setting greater than Earth. We're just talking about what's going on this planet. Yogananda said, in terms of the soul reincarnating, which is a premise that I'm just going to throw into this discussion, that there are, as he put it, many, many planets that we can go to. As he put it, the creation is teeming with life, and we simply incarnate on a planet that is in a planetary cycle where the conditions serve our personal spiritual evolution. Now, that may mean we go to a planet if we're highly evolved, where we go to a planet that's highly evolved, or even highly evolved people can go to a planet where it's much lower, or where it's in transition, like this one is. It all depends on what conditions will facilitate personal spiritual growth, which is a matter completely independent of circumstances. Jesus Christ incarnated at one of the lowest points on planet Earth, because it was his job both to plant these high teachings and to provide a dynamic contrast to what was going on.
And not an easy job at that.
definitely.
Well, you saw what happened to him. I mean, that was a very typical Kali Yuga response to the presence of greatness, was let's get rid of it.
Right. Well, we are on the upswing now.
That's
the good news.
But the tradition of persecuting saints is really a time-honored one. Most people, I mean, there's a kind of societal resistance in lower ages especially.
Right. They're persecuted in the lower ages, revered in the higher ages, because they're finally recognized.
And yeah.
I guess, something else in between. And,
something else in between. It's just the drama, the ongoing drama of the aspiration of the soul toward the light and the inner resistance of the ego accepting that.
And I think that kind of touches on another question that a lot of people ask, is with the yuga cycle being such a large scale of time, what real difference does it make to us in our relatively short lifetimes comparatively?
Well, I think the more we understand about the dynamic of what's going on around us, it keeps you from being depressed. It keeps you from putting too much concern over short-term realities. It helps us understand, for example, right now, the fact that this is Dwapara Ascending makes the foundation of the communities that I've been involved in helping to build extremely important, because as the ages ascend, the foundation that we're laying now is going to be of benefit, of greater and greater benefit, as more and more people tune in to the positive potential of spiritual community. Whereas, as an example, right after Jesus died, the movement of the planetary cycle was going down and becoming more materialistic. So spiritual people separated themselves from society. They went off into caves and monasteries. You just couldn't uplift society as a whole. But now, society as a whole is extremely amenable to new ways of thinking. So a person seeking to serve in a broad way can optimistically plant seeds for the future with the understanding that it will be accepted.
Well, if not extremely amenable, at least more and more open to these ideas.
When I became a vegetarian in 1968, when I started talking about organic foods and things like that, it was so radical. And now it's just commonplace, isn't it? When I first started teaching meditation, we were the only game in town. Now you can learn meditation at the grocery store virtually.
Yeah, I know. Time Magazine says 17 million people are now meditating or practicing yoga on a regular basis.
And that's a change that we've seen in our short lifetime. And we're, you know, in an ascending age, that's the indicator of the future, not this resistance that we see also in Time Magazine. But that's the past. The future is the 17,000.
Right, yeah, 17 million. Well, it's 7% of the population, so as we get to bigger numbers, we start to get a critical mass and change.
It is amazing, though, how resistant people are to change in general, just as societies as a whole.
Well, you don't have to look any farther than your own mind to see it. Then you just see it acted out on the society level.
Right. Yeah. You know, some people hear this yuga concept and kind of say, well, I don't have to do much because I'm just going to hang on the planet and the planet's going to get better.
Uh-huh.
But it's really an intermingled dance, isn't it, between personal effort and what's going on the earth itself.
Well, the fact is, once you put the concept of death and reincarnation in it, we reincarnate where we have a vibratory attunement. And if the earth becomes too refined, you won't evolve just by holding on to this planet, because eventually your body will die and your consciousness will take you to a place that's compatible with your own consciousness. And if earth gets ahead of you, you'll just be somewhere else that's at a lower level.
Well, speaking of death and reincarnation, we have to take a break, but we'll be reincarnating right back in a few seconds.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden here with Jeff Pitino.
How are you?
And we are talking today with Asha Praver. And Asha, before the break there, we were talking about the intermingling of the yuga cycle with the sort of the personal cycle of many lives. And the question pops up, you know, what happens to all the bad people in the higher ages?
Well, spiritually speaking, of course, no one is really bad. They simply behave badly. Yogananda said the only difference between a saint and a sinner is the way the sinner and the saint behave. The substance is the same. But nonetheless, those who who need, for their own spiritual growth, to live in, on a grosser level, just find a planet that's having a cycle where the yuga cycle is really low. Even right now, you know, a lot of very dark souls are sharing planet Earth with us. You see it, all of these, you know, genocidal civil wars which are happening where people are just turning and tearing each other to pieces. I mean, some are victims, but there's some dark perpetrators. But when the planet Earth goes into a very high age and the vibration here is very refined, such souls, vibrationally, they won't even see this planet. When it comes time for them to reincarnate, maybe they'll go to the Earth's opposite, which is having the opposite cycle because it's most distant from the source of energy. The souls will not be lost. They'll just act out their personal dramas in a place that's more appropriate for them.
Makes sense.
And correspondingly, higher souls who are now inhabiting more refined planets will be drawn to this one.
Right. You know, we spent a lot of time at the recent CPAC talking about the character of the ages as described by the Egyptian and the Greek cultures. And they have so much mythology about demigods in the Silver Age and gods in the higher ages. And it's really a nice way to look at the character of the ages, these labels that the Greeks gave us. They said the lowest age is the age of man. The age we've just come into is the age of the hero, and then the demigods and gods.
Interesting. It's a lovely way to put it.
Isn't it? Because here on planet Earth, when we're transitioning from the lower ages to the higher ages, and everything is still in flux right in between, there's just many, many opportunities to be heroes. And mm-hmm. that is no doubt why a lot of people have incarnated on the planet today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a lovely way to put it.
Why aren't these ideas, the idea of the yuga cycle, known more in Western society?
Well, here's an interesting explanation of that. It's the one that Yogananda gave. He said that one of the factors that happens in descending Kali Yuga, so as the consciousness of the planet gets more dense, it's impossible for the average man or for society as a whole to hold both a materialistic and a spiritual view simultaneously. And as the yuga descended, Yogananda said that there was a split between East and West, between Orient and Occident. And the Orient specialized in keeping a remnant of spiritual truth alive, which is the simple thought that the purpose of life is to transcend the ego and to realize God, and became somewhat sloppy in the ability to influence the world. And so much of the Orient went into poverty. But in India especially, a remnant of the true teaching of yoga, a yoga practice, meditation practice, was kept alive. In the West, we specialized in the material facts of life and became increasingly efficient in material accomplishment, material development, economic prosperity, but increasingly unimaginative in our greater understanding of the nature of life and our and the way we defined our religion. It became materialistic also. But what's happening in a higher age is that mankind's consciousness can embrace both materialistic reality and spiritual reality without any difficulty, so that a separation between East and West is dissolving, and both realities are coming together in the same human mind.
Right, and you can see this over the last few decades, as you yourself mentioned. You know, you became a vegetarian in '68 when it was still kind of rare. That's the year I did it myself, by the way.
And
you're right; people thought we were nuts.
Right.
And today, man, it's very common. Or the knowledge of reincarnation.
Right,
most people didn't know what you were talking about, and now it's a very common idea.
They just down the road. From us here, they opened up a huge Whole Foods, which is all organic food.
Right.
It's part of the trend. And so I think this knowledge of yugas will be spreading very, very rapidly over the next decade or two. At least we're going to work to make that happen.
Well, it's a deeply satisfying addition to our understanding. And Westerners are simply becoming less persuaded that we have all the answers. We become more receptive to other cultures. America is becoming a real melting pot, melting pot that now includes not only Europe, but also enormous influences from Asia and the Orient in all ways. And that opens us up to cultural realities that we were biased against, but now have become our own neighbors. It changes everything.
Yeah, it's a real positive, and it's good going the other way, too, because, you know, India and China suffered for so long in great poverty, and they've seen the improvements of the West. And while the spiritual side of things is harder to recognize, I think we're going to see those improvements come this way just as rapidly.
Yeah, it's time for the two realities to come together. They're not inherently different. They're two sides of the same coin. Only Kali Yuga made us think that they were separated.
Yeah.
In Dwapara, we know they're not.
Great. Well, I'm an optimist then.
Great. Me too.
I think that's the good way to be.
Absolutely. It's the higher truth. Short term suffering, but in the end, bliss.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, we're getting towards the end of our show here, Asha, but I sure wanted to thank you for coming on and talking with us. You have a wonderful knowledge there, and I hope we get a chance to meet up there at Ananda sometime soon.
I'd love for you to, and I'd like to direct people again to doorofmyheart.com if you're interested in the book I've written about Swami Kriyananda.
Great. So that's doorofmyheart.com. Good. Well, we thank you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
It's been a joy.
Thank you very much, Asha.
Goodbye, Walter. Goodbye, Jeff.
You've been listening to Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttendon is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I really enjoyed that session with Asha Praver.
That was just a wonderful, wonderful conversation.
Yes, nice person. If any of you have some ideas for guests that you would like to hear on the show, we invite you to send us an email. You can reach me, Walter, at BinaryResearchInstitute.org. Or Jeff
at BinaryResearchInstitute.org. Again, we'd love to hear your feedback. Please let us know what you think of our show, and if there's anyone that you'd like to hear on the show as well. Also, if you'd like more information on the Binary Research Institute, visit our website, which is www.BinaryResearchInstitute.org.
And we thank you again for listening to Cosmic Influence. In the meantime, let's all do whatever we can to bring on the higher ages.